Welcome back to the podcast. I have with me today Sally Buck, the National Rural Health Resource Center CEO, a nonprofit organization dedicated to sustaining and improving healthcare in rural communities. She served in that role and served communities for 9 years in that capacity. Before that, she was associate director. She is a fellow of the American College of Healthcare Executives. Thank you so much for agreeing to sit down and have a chat with me about rural healthcare. Sally, is there anything that I missed that you want to share with the listeners today?
Well, thank you for the invitation to chat today, Abraham, on rural healthcare, especially in Minnesota, because it's a state where at least a third of the population is rural. And actually, we have more healthcare providers and hospitals in rural than we do in metro.
And that's not, you share it, that is not a stat I think people are really prepared for when they're having a conversation about healthcare. I did some brief homework before this, and I found a stat, and I'm curious to get your reaction to it, that something like 90% of the country is considered rural, but only 20% of the entire population of the country live in those areas. Does that sound right? Does that feel right based on your experience?
Yes, it does. The in rural areas, there tend to be smaller population per square mile. And so things are definitely spread out. There's a greater distance between communities and hospitals. So it's not a large population generally, but the amount per square mile. So that adds a lot of challenges in terms of transportation or technology and even workforce.
Yeah. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about what to you is the difference between traditional and rural healthcare. And maybe we already talked about what it means for population per square mile or something like that. But maybe break it down into some of those other things that we wouldn't typically consider as we're looking at healthcare in a rural setting.
Mm-hmm. Well, rural healthcare tends to be delivered by smaller hospitals, and they're generally the greatest number are critical access hospitals. So they're 25 beds or less. And so they're paid differently to be that smaller size or cost-based reimbursement. So unlike metro health systems and hospitals who are on a prospective payment system or maybe much more in paid on value and performance, they're payments are adjusted for low volume. Same with the 4,500 rural health clinics in the country, that it's a cost-based reimbursement. So they're paid differently, and their revenue is primarily Medicare and Medicaid. So over 60-75% of their payments are really government payers. So generally, there's less competition in rural communities, that there's one hospital. There may be different options for primary care, like a private or rural health clinic or a clinic connected to a hospital or community health center. But there aren't competing factions right in the same community.
And what that turns into is we have less draw for those healthcare workers. It results in less probably desirable for the payers to say, hey, let's really jump into this, very sparsely populated area. And then kind of hit this already too, is the distance from higher levels of care, right? What are the opportunities or strategies that some of these smaller health systems that you've seen today, what kinds of things have you seen to try to solve some of these traditional rural healthcare issues?
Development of primary care in rural areas is very strong. And, we know that's 60 to 70% of the care that's needed is primary care. And facilities in rural areas have grown quite a bit in offering outpatient services like outpatient surgery, rehabilitation, and providing care coordination. So trying to, move towards preventative services and, helping patients not only stay healthier, but looking at controlling the maybe high level costs of emergency department visits, if they can be prevented upstream in primary care and prevention. We see collaborations quite often that hospitals will network together, either as a system or maybe as independent hospitals working together in a network and sharing in technology or sharing in training, in services for that maybe they're sharing, a specialist who can serve a number of hospitals in one county or one region of an area, so they can support specialists. Although maybe just that one hospital or one community doesn't quite have the service area or volume to support an orthopedic surgeon or an obstetrician, gynecologist, if they're, sharing with another service area, then they'd have enough volume to support that. Also with telehealth services, which just, grew tremendously during the pandemic, but that had already been a mechanism for specialty consults to occur with patients remaining in their home community in a rural area, but able to have a consult with a specialist from a metro area. And the patient doesn't have to travel, the specialist doesn't have to travel as well, and it makes it more efficient for that consult.
Yeah, I remember 3-4 years ago, I started a position at an organization, and I just assumed that everybody had this robust telemedicine program that we could just support everything, and then come to find out they had nothing. And I had the opportunity, I just happened to be mm-hmm. at the right tables to start this program. And I realized it wasn't this silver bullet of a solution that we all thought it might be. And it particularly broke down as we saw some of these rural communities, things like broadband, internet service in the home. We take that for granted, I think, oftentimes. I mean, you and I are here talking face to face. Our listeners don't know that, but we're talking face to face, and we could be 5 miles away from each other or 100 miles away from each other. And, we'd never know the difference. But if we're in one of those smaller communities, we don't even have access to that. Can we talk about then with that, what are some of your, either experientially or theoretically, what are some of the inequities that face these rural communities? You can talk about broadband access to broadband level internet service if you'd like, or anything mm-hmm. else that you've seen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are definitely differences in broadband access or speed of access, and certainly in workforce, in terms of having the, as we talked about, the service area to support some types of providers, but also in recruiting, nurses, lab, x-ray, and even competing with other industry in a small town. It's very challenging to recruit nursing assistants in long-term care, for instance, where the wage is determined by the state, or, there's limited revenue to compete with wages that an entry-level staff person would gain working in a coffee shop, for instance, And so it takes the recruitment, even starting in high schools, of encouraging the career in healthcare and all the options that can provide. We hear of high schools that have provided health occupation classes in high school, and the students obtain a nursing assistant certificate or a basic paramedic certificate. So they're able to have that job experience in healthcare and be in a rural community and see, do they like that and move that forward. Rural areas often find that they have other challenges. They have a higher mortality in things like cancer, stroke, cardiovascular disease, injuries, and respiratory illness. And so there's already the sicker patients, so to speak. They tend to be older. The average age in rural Minnesota and many parts of the country is higher than it is statewide or nationwide. In rural faces other kind of those social drivers of health. Those could be more limiting in terms of a lower average education, lower income, and difficulties with transportation as well as housing too.
Yeah. Have you seen any creative solutions to any of those? I think the salient points, and maybe if I've missed one, feel free to correct me. The salient points seem to be healthcare workers finding them, keeping them. Mm-hmm. Second one is stable transportation or housing. And then the third one, I'm trying to see my notes. Maybe those were the two higher ones on that list. But have you seen any creative solutions to either of those?
We have in a community that we worked with, a critical access hospital. They decided as part of their community health needs assessment, you know, beyond a survey, they really wanted to get out and hear from non-traditional partners in the community and look at, were they really meeting the needs of the population, not just their patients who tended to be when filling out the survey, but to try to address those social drivers of health. And they were finding that food access was a key issue, especially getting fresh foods and at providing education about food. So they partnered with the Farm Bureau and they actually, you know, helped provide educational sessions and bring a, you know, farmers market and, you know, working to bring fresh foods available at the food shelf or, you know, so that was one. And then the same hospital also looked at, there was limits in patients coming from a certain area and there was a school there and they talked with the school and found, well, transportation was an issue. So they actually worked to bring a mobile clinic to the school and provide physicals. And they shared an example that it was fall and there were a number of sports physicals needed for these school students to be able to participate. So they provided 27 physicals for sports in one day, you know, a provider being there on site and kind of overcoming that barrier of a parent would have to take off work, get an appointment, you know, drive 30 miles to the clinic. So I think hospitals and clinics looking just, you know, beyond what they provide in terms of healthcare, of not that they have to do it all, but reaching out to other community partners to address the challenges and come up with solutions.
What advice would you have for those rural healthcare leaders or even the non-official leaders in those communities as they're looking to find resources? Where can they look? Maybe they don't have, you know, someone local that could help them. Where would you encourage them to look if they're trying to come up with something?
We encourage leaders to, I guess, you know, turn to their own staff as well. Again, not just in leadership, but talking with their own staff of, you know, where are people shopping or where are their challenges for receiving education on healthcare issues, or are there, you know, misconceptions with preventive screening? So it could be talking with employers, with faith leaders, public health, aging services, and then, you know, looking at still doing your community health needs assessment and looking at that, the data, as well as looking at your community health needs and also secondary data of what are the risk and health behaviors in your region, but really getting out and doing key informant interviews or focus groups and looking at those non-traditional partners to provide input
Perfect. So we're coming here towards the end, Sally. For those of you who listened to our prior podcast, I shared a story about when I was in my undergraduate work, I had a communications teacher. And he, at the very beginning of the semester, indicated that we should be prepared for that moment when we have 5 minutes or whatever duration of time, that we could have the world listen. What would we have them hear us say? So, Sally, I'll ask you, with the remaining time that we have, you have, you know, whatever time left, what would you want the world to hear regarding rural health, inequities, challenges, workforce, any of these things that we've talked about? What would be your final statement?
Well, for healthcare executives or students and leaders, I think leadership is so key. We see that is such a predictor to successful healthcare organizations, and then those organizations working with their community. So leaders that really are committed to a culture of collaboration, of listening to other joint partners in their communities, and being able to work on solutions with employers and payers, and create a positive culture towards quality in healthcare, and a spirit of that collaborative leadership, I think, both in the healthcare organization, but in the community, makes a difference. And given that, even though we talked about maybe there's a smaller number of the population in rural, chances are, you know, all of us in healthcare within our organization or system, we work with rural healthcare providers, rural patients. And so it's good to have that perspective of collaboration, and it's not, you know, how do we work together with the patient at the center of the mission, not what's just best for the organization, or it's always going to be better at the bigger or metro site. Think about the patient and as the center.
That's great. I think of the rising tide raises all ships, and that can't be more true than in rural community care. Thank you so much, Sally, for your time. Really great opportunity to have sat down and spoken with you. Listeners, thank you for tuning in and listening to our conversation, and we look forward to seeing or hearing you next time.
Thanks, Sally. Thank you, Abraham. It's been great to talk with you today.